Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Fleet Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
It's a new day. It's a new day. It's a new era here at the Second Print Comics Podcast. And I'm just going to dive right into things. I'm not going to mess with you. I'm going to get right to bringing in my co-host, the ever-loving rambling man himself, Rimzo W. Martinez. Rimzo, what's happening?
Any reference of a brand new day triggers me so much as Tom King was triggered over the weekend and then he triggered Dan Slott. If you have no clue what I'm talking about or who those people are, it's okay. Because you're listening to the Second Print Comics Podcast. Mark, how was your weekend?
My weekend was it was okay. It was fine. I enjoyed it, but I work in the live sports realm, and I was actually working for most of the weekend, so it was fun, but you know, not the same kind of fun as if I wasn't working. I didn't have the same kind of fun as you had. I heard you had an interesting weekend.
It was supposed to be awesome, but it was more like adequate.
Adequate cons. I flew
halfway across the freaking country to go to AwesomeCon in DC. Now, this is AwesomeCon holds a special place in my heart. I've gone every year I could since 2015. And last year they didn't have one because of the pandemic and everything else. But this year they were able to make it work. And, you know, it wasn't the same. I went ahead and recorded a whole thing on Patreon, giving kind of like the breakdown of my experience there. But, you know, at the end of the day, for listeners of this show, you know, for those of you who interact with Mark and I online and stuff, you understand that we've got criticisms of the comic book and entertainment industry. I don't want to be like other, comic book review and, you know, commentary shows where we just kind of shit on everything, because there's a lot to complain about in terms of the industry, but there's also a lot to really be happy about. And ultimately what makes these conventions so much fun are the fans. Just like, you know, every week we come back here and, you know, we get to, you know, hang out with all of you all after the show and talk about the things we talk about on here, because at the end of the day, what makes fandom awesome is the fans. And I don't think we should ever, you know, lose sight of that. Everything that goes on in comics and movies is meant to entertain people and bring people together, even when it's divisive or controversial or something like that. But it's a weird time to be a fan, because I feel like we're either extremely patronized in some ways, or we're a bit too spoiled in other cases. So I don't ever want to sound too down on it, but different year, I'll say that. I don't know if I'm going to go back again, but maybe people can go ahead and listen to this on Patreon for the full inside, you know, backstage scoop on that.
You know what, Rimzo? That's what I call a natural plug, and I like that. And so, yeah, you can actually hear Rimzo did about a 30-minute breakdown of his weekend at AwesomeCon. Maybe just for the folks, just for one little bright moment, what was like the best part of the weekend? What was your highlight?
I've been really worried about the decline of the actual number of comic book vendors at AwesomeCon. Something I mentioned in that recap is that, you know, like for San Diego Comic-Con, the joke has been it stopped being about comic books over 20 years ago. But what this did provide me the opportunity to do was really get to haggle, really get to take advantage of some really good prices, because there weren't that many vendors there. And a lot of vendors who missed last year, you know, they had to get rid of a lot of excess inventory that they weren't able to sell online or anything like that. So I was able to get Spawn issue 1 and Web of Spider-Man issue 1, both of those for a combined $50, which is a pretty good steal, because even an unsigned Spawn issue 1 can go up to $400 sometimes.
Really?
At these conventions, not online.
Well,
you
can
find
I get
it
for my signed Spawn number 1 then.
I mean, at least
Todd McFarlane signed and certified, baby.
If it comes with a certification, you could do up to $200 plus. Because I've seen his stuff.
Yeah, it's not the book isn't graded, but it has that certification of the signing that I got probably at a. So see, when I was growing up, Rimzo, in the late 1800s, I used to go to the New York Comic Con with my dad every year, and like you mentioned, like Comic-Cons used to be almost entirely about the vendors. Like, when I went to Comic-Cons, like, that was why. It was to just basically look at comics, and there would be some, you know, a few pretty big, you know, some of the bigger names would be there doing autographs for, like, $20 or $25, and you'd buy one of their books, or maybe you'd bring one, maybe you'd wait in, like, a line or two. But most of the point of the convention was about looking through books and buying other books, whereas now conventions have become these, like, giant extravaganzas about, you know, cosplay and major announcements from studios and all stuff that's well and good. But, you know, back in my day, here we go, it was almost entirely about finding cool comics at getting good deals on like masses of comics.
Yeah. And I mean, it was also kind of weird too, because, for example, like neither Marvel, DC, or Dark Horse, who typically have booths at AwesomeCon, none of them were there. So that was already kind of a big deal. Like, everyone knew that DC was basically gonna back out of these things, because they backed out of Comic-Con, they backed out of New York Comic-Con, so they backed out of San Diego and New York, and they've moved exclusively just doing Fandome, because AT&T was like, we're not gonna spend money to have all these Warner Brothers execs and everyone else from DC go here for, you know, lackluster reviews and feedback from reporters and stuff like that.
Fans shitting on us online.
Yeah, so I mean, they did Fandome last year, which was entirely online. For the most part, everyone was really happy with Fandome. And because everything still got pushed off in terms of releases and stuff, they didn't even do a Fandome 2021. They were just like, go back and watch 2020 for everything that we're eventually going to put out. So that was kind of funny. But also, like, Third Eye Comics is the largest single comic book store on the East Coast. I think it's only, I think it's like neck and neck with Midtown, but I think in terms of like the actual selection of stuff, they're the largest. You know, they started AwesomeCon years back, and they didn't even show up this year. So it was a weird situation where it's like, where the hell is everybody? And for the people that showed up, I mean, it was primarily, I want to say this was a place to grab like t-shirts, cosplay gear, and Funko Pops. That's really what it was, which is nice, but like, that was mainly the people that showed up. And even the celebrities didn't show up as much. I gave a breakdown of who didn't show up, but I mean, everyone was just kind of there, and you know, like it didn't feel the same. Let's put it that way. But you know, we've got so much other stuff coming out throughout the rest of the year. It's almost one of those situations where it's like, I'm not gonna let a weird con experience kind of get my way of enjoying everything else. At the end of the day, I'm happy that they still did AwesomeCon, because a convention these days is better than not having one. You know, so I don't want to sound too dour about it, but you know, we've got a lot of stuff to look forward to. I mean, hell, I mean, I'll just go ahead and break the ice that No Way Home trailer. What the hell?
Yeah, well, that's the first thing we're going to get into today, I think. And, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the show, this is a bit of a new day. I was not referencing Brand New Day, although that is kind of a tie-in to some of what the plot of the scene.
Hashtag, it's all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected. Just be with us in the moment. Feel the flow.
Oh, Dan Slott, former Spider-Man writer who did the Brand New Day storyline, will not be going to any cons any day soon. I will say that.
Well, that works out great, because I don't need to remember that story at all.
Nobody likes him.
So, we decided recently, based on fan feedback, that fans, and especially our patrons, who, you know, we're going to listen to them a little bit more. They're the ones that like us so much. They send us money over at patreon.com/secondprintpod, where you can hear Remzo's full breakdown of the Awesome Con, as well as tons of other bonus content, additional Remzo rants you get every week, the summer reading lists. We have the Claire Continues, where I will continue with some of the books we've read, the Random Marvel Comics Podcast, My Tales from the Fucking Pile, all sorts of extra bonus content you get for as little as $5 a month. Over on the Patreon, you can even give us up to 40, 50, whatever you want. You can give us $1 million a month for all I care. But, you know, at certain levels, like last week, we had our Kirby Club member, Eric, who set us on the task of reviewing the Dark Phoenix saga. So that was a fun one to visit as well. A lot more fun than it was during his initial show, sending us down the Phoenix saga. Although I will always appreciate those wee bitty leprechauns that we got to meet on that journey.
But the leprechauns are the treasure at the end of the rainbow.
Absolutely. The real treasure was the leprechauns we got to meet along the way. But what we're doing here, what we decided to do after some behind the scenes negotiation between myself and Mr. Martinez here, we decided that we wanted to incorporate into this program a bit of what Remzo mentioned, a lot of the stuff that we're looking forward to, a lot of the stuff we're enjoying in the current, not necessarily strictly the comic book world, pop culture. We'll talk about movies, TV, that sort of thing. It's something we've done here and there on various episodes. We've done the occasional movie review, the occasional reading list, talking about some of the books we're reading. And whenever we do that stuff, a couple things happen. One, we get great feedback from it. We have higher download numbers. Our fans say we really like it when you do this. So we've said from the beginning, even though we have this format that we agreed on and that we generally are going to stick to, where either I or Remzo picks a story from our past, from our fanhood, and we do really a deep dive, almost page by page breakdown of it. That is our core format. We really got a lot of great feedback when we started to talk about the books that we're reading. You know, people really like to know what we're reading now in addition to what we were reading before. And we get great feedback when we do reviews. So we decided to combine all of that stuff into, we talked about doing maybe an extra segment or an extra bonus show, but we are, while we do have some Patreon money, this is not our job, our primary job. We are very busy men with many, many side hustles and that sort of thing. So we want to do it in a way that wouldn't cause us to have to spend too much extra time than we already are. So we came up with a solution where the fourth Wednesday of every month, we have not named this segment. If we'll even name it anything, we're open to suggestions as always, if anyone wants to create a jingle for us. But it's basically going to be what we're watching and what we're reading, and we're just going to, you know, shoot the shit or talk about what current events in the comic book world. I know Remzo has some news highlights he's going to run through in a bit. We're just going to basically shoot the shit about the things we are enjoying and looking forward to in the comic book world. And not only do we get that great feedback from it, but I know Remzo and myself both kind of feel a little bit refreshed when we have the chance to do these episodes, because when you listen to most of our episodes, our standard format, we really do go deep on these stories. And
we go balls deep, Mark.
Balls deep, you might say. And we put a lot of preparation into having the ability to go balls deep. You know, you got to get a lot of things in order when you're going to go that deep on things. I'm not going to go much further with the balls deep analogy because we just don't want to go there.
You can only go balls deep.
You can only go balls deep here. But this gives us a break as well. It gives us a little bit of a refresher where I don't have to meticulously prepare for an episode. I don't have to, you know, go through all my notes, go through the story page by page, really know this thing inside out. Because sometimes I prepare so much for an episode that I'm almost sick of the story by the time I talk about it, just because I've absorbed myself in it so much. So this gives us a chance to just kind of give our brains a little bit of a reset once a month too, and just, you know, talk about things that's more fresh on our mind and kind of off the cuff, as opposed to doing the many, many hours often of preparation that we do for these things.
Yeah, I always usually carry a Bill O'Reilly type philosophy when it comes to the episodes I produce. I'm usually like, fuck it, I'll do it live. We'll do it live.
Right, well,
and then we just kind of keep going. I throw notes like, she's not wearing many clothes, and that dialogue was kind of strange. And
you know you're heterosexual once you see how you react to Emma Frost. I believe that was almost a direct quote from Remzo.
Yes, that's the gay test.
Yes.
There you go.
This is the kind of hard-hitting analysis you get here on Second Print. But you already mentioned it, Remzo, so I think we should just dive right into what you brought up here, the No Way Home trailer. Where do we start?
Speaking of with the balls theme, I mean, I got straight hard on when I saw that trailer. Kevin Feige told us, you're going to wait. You're going to wait a little bit longer. And it got to the point where Twitter just decided to finally do something good with its collective hatred and tell him, Kevin, show us the freaking trailer. So he told us that we were going to wait a couple days, and then it turned into a couple hours. And then, or I think around 10 a.m. Central Time, I'm sorry, 10 p.m. Central Time Monday, the trailer got released to Twitter first. And it was actually Caleb Franz who texted me. He was like, No Way Home trailer, No Way Home trailer. And immediately I was just like, I'm looking at it now. And my gosh, we've been kind of teasing.
Part of me wishes they gave us nothing. Part of me wishes it was just like Peter coming on screen saying, hey, not even Peter, Tom Holland in his British accent saying, hey, go watch No. I started to do Australian. I cannot do these accents. Anyway.
It's like young Russell Crowe.
Go watch No Way Home. You bloody wanker. I don't believe that's what Tom Holland says.
Anyway, we've been talking about our expectations for No Way Home for a while. I think it was a year ago you and I were discussing this idea of them potentially getting into the whole multiverse thing. And when we started seeing that, you know, Doctor Strange was going to be in the film, Alfred Molina, who was the original Doc Ock, was recast as Doc Ock. And then we got Jamie Foxx, who played Electro, coming back as Electro. We began to really see, it's like, oh my gosh, they're jumping into some kind of Spider-Verse situation. And with Loki, with WandaVision, with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, they basically pointed out, and even the What If series, it's all about the multiverse. Like, this is where Marvel is going. And for the most part, this was not going to be a typical Spider-Man film. So in many ways, I'll talk about the one thing from the trailer that I really liked and the one thing that I really didn't like. One thing I really liked, oh my God, Alfred Molina as Doc Ock. We're getting, I'm 99% sure that's Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin. We might have a potential Lizard. We know that Jamie Foxx is coming back. Seeing him with Doctor Strange is always really cool. So I'm really excited. Like, this is like my entire childhood just colliding together with everything you love from all the other Spider-Man movies. So I'm just really excited for that. I'm also really pissed off because this also confirms some of my least favorite points about the MCU Spider-Man. And this is never a criticism of Tom Holland. I think Tom Holland's a great actor. My problem with his Peter Parker ever since he was introduced in Captain America Civil War is that in every appearance he's had and in every movie of his he's had, he's always just Iron Tony Boy Jr. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I feel that, you know, he's all power and no responsibility, and that this is a Spider-Man who hasn't really come into the role of Peter, the genuine, authentic hero. While he's certainly heroic, it's not the same. So with this film, you know, giving him another mentor in terms of Doctor Strange, in terms of him just finding another way to quickly find a convenient way to, fight the bad guys and everything by trying to cast a spell and everything, a la Brand New Day, One More Day, all that jazz. And then to have not even his versions of those villains, it's not like these are MCU villains, but to have all the other Spider-Man villains, it's almost like, you know, this feels like, filler Spider-Man. I almost feel like eventually one day he's going to go back to Sony and he's going to not have a giant combined universe. And then we might get to see a genuine, like, hero's journey Spider-Man. Whereas with this Spider-Man in the MCU, I feel like he's just kind of skipped to the end a bit. And by encountering older villains that other Spider-Men fought, it takes away what would make him feel genuinely his own. And that's my problem.
Yeah, I have really mixed feelings about Spider-Man in the MCU because I was so excited when I first heard it was going to happen. Spider-Man has been my first hero I really fell in love with.
I have nothing wrong with Tom Holland. He stays on for a while. I think he's a great Spider-Man.
You could argue, I might argue he is the best Spider-Man actor. Maybe not the best written Spider-Man, but I think he actually is the Spider-Man performance that I enjoy the most. I buy him as a teenager the most. I buy him as a teenager even more than I bought goofy Tobey Maguire as a teenager. All due respect to Tobey Maguire, but maybe I'll be seeing him soon too anyway. I love Tom Holland's Spider-Man. I agree with the criticisms that, you know, I think it seems like Marvel refuses or doesn't want to, for due to this sort of rights issue with Sony, go all in on making Spider-Man the true Spider-Man that we want. It seems like they just want to make him someone that they can put in movies, give their own movies, but it's not about necessarily building up Spider-Man as one of the greatest heroes in the MCU. It's always about him sort of being, like you said, Tony Jr., or now it'll be, I guess, you know, Doctor Strange Jr. Like, you know, he's always sort of the mentee, I guess. There's mentor, and then what's the other guy? The apprentice. There you go.
Yeah.
He's always sort of the apprentice. And I want to think the character would grow out of that, but here we are at the third movie, and there's no signs of that happening. In fact, we never really, I don't think they've ever even mentioned Uncle Ben or any of his origin story in this MCU, and I didn't want to see a straight-from-scratch Spider-Man story, because we'd seen the origin story twice in the last decade before this one came about, but I think we could have used some character building, or at least references to it.
I mean, you could skip the technicalities, but you could still show the progression. And is Peter,
give me a flashback.
Yeah, I mean, is Peter a different hero now than he was when he got introduced in Civil War? I would say maybe. Like, he has in certain ways, but it's like let's think about it.
The only thing he's really gone through, although obviously when we see No Way Home and he's gone through this thing with his identity being revealed, the only thing he's really gone through is losing Tony Stark. It's like Tony Stark became his Uncle Ben.
Like, even after Avengers Endgame, in which, like, he has gone through this giant galactic journey, freaking died and everything else, when he gets back into No Way Home, I'm sorry, Far From Home, his second film in the MCU, he's still so completely unsure of himself. He still shrugs that responsibility that has been granted to him by Tony. So, you know, it's one of those situations where it's like he took a big step forward, and then he took a step back. And now, you know, like I get why he wants to do this. So for people that are new to all this, who are wondering, like, what's the whole Brand New Day references? Dan Slott, who's a writer who hates comic book fans, wrote a arc in the comic by Marvel about 20. I think I wasn't going to say 2010. It was more like 2006, 2007, honestly.
Like a year or two after Civil War.
Yeah, it was. So 2006, let's say that. Where basically the world found out who Peter Parker was. And
find out he voluntarily revealed his identity when he took Tony Stark's side in the Civil War, which is, you know, a bit different than how it's revealed in the movies here.
Yeah, so everyone knows who Peter is. And basically what Peter does is he works with Doctor Strange, and they end up working with, Mephisto, to basically wipe everyone's memory of who he was. And what that did was that erased his time as a new Avenger, that erased his marriage of Mary Jane. It brought Harry Osborn back from the dead, because he had been dead in the comics for about 20 years at that point. So it retconned a lot of stuff. And the big complaint at the time was that this had regressed the character, which in many ways it did. I was young when I was reading that era. And for me, I at least saw it as, okay, well, he's younger again. There's more of a clean slate. Maybe this will be good. And there are some Brand New Day era stories by Slott and by some of the other writers that jumped in that I did like at the time. But for the most part, it really kind of regressed his progression as a character in many ways.
How does that work? Does Peter Parker remember being married to Mary Jane?
He eventually did. So
She doesn't know what ever happened.
Oh, she knows it happened.
She knows it happened, but she knows
recently,
that her memory is
late. Like very, very recently, they retconned the retcon. Where it wasn't even Peter who caused it all to happen. It was actually Mary Jane who caused it all to happen. So it's a whole complicated mess. But basically the premise of that is being implemented in this film, because he wants to change it. There's a break in the multiverse and Doctor Strange is a part of it. So, you know, they've basically taken that as inspiration for this. And in many ways, it's like, For Tom Holland to go through all of that and then to say, okay, now we got to go back and fix it. It's another one of those moments where it's through deep selfishness, because in the comics, one of the other things that also triggers him to do something so drastic is the fact that Aunt May gets shot by a henchman from the Kingpin. So he's really doing it as a way of saving Aunt May. In this film, he's doing it because, at least from the trailer, it's like, yeah, everyone thinks that he killed Mephisto, but it's more like I'm tired of the paparazzi following me. So it's less that I have to do this or someone I love will die, and it's more like I'm tired of being annoyed. Make everyone forget. And it's like, Peter, that's running away from something that you know is not gonna get better if you do it this way. So it's like all the time he has just constantly run away from these things. Yeah, great power comes great responsibility, which, by the way, he's never uttered in the films. No one has ever even uttered it to him. He's had some of those moments so far, but they've been trounced because of the weight of his other actions in terms of avoiding things. So, I mean, that's my biggest problem with it, because and I don't know if it's a behind the scenes issue between Sony and Marvel where they both want to kind of leverage their bets, you know, leave a lot to chance of what could happen later. But I mean, this is appearance 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's going to be a 6th appearance in an MCU film. And I don't feel that he has made as much progress as even, you know, Tobey Maguire made between 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, I mean, but how much of that do you think is just simply the fact that Disney does not have full control over that character? I think that's a huge part of it.
So, okay, big news highlight, because two big things came out from Sony today. One is that the Venom film, Let There Be Carnage, which was supposed to come out this fall, has been pushed to sometime in 2022. They have not released a month. They've just said that it's going to be sometime next year. So we were expecting it, I think, in October, and now we're not going to see it till 2022. So we don't know if it's because Sony doesn't want to compete with some of the other Marvel films, but it also doesn't look good for Morbius, because now there's talks that Morbius is also getting pushed to 2022. I think Morbius is supposed to come out in November. So Sony has put all their Spider-Man related films that they themselves are doing off into 2022 for the most part. And then today, like hours after the No Way Home trailer came out, they went ahead and released a statement saying that their Spider-Man films are no longer to be referred to as the Sony universe of Marvel characters. Now it is Sony's Spider-Man universe, which really shows them doubling down that, you know, Spider-Man is ours. He's going to be ours because he's always been ours. And we're not just going to give him away. We're not just going to, you know, sidestep to Marvel based off what Marvel wants. They are very solidly saying, you took all our other people. Now this is ours and we're going to freaking keep it and we're going to own it. So, you know, in many ways, I've been in the camp of, you know, give the kid back to Sony. Like, we had a good run. I don't really feel like it's necessary anymore. They obviously want to integrate more Spider-Man projects into the film line. Like, we know that Aaron Taylor Johnson, who played Kick-Ass and Quicksilver in Avengers Age of Ultron, is going to be in a solo Kraven film. Like, Sony gives no fucks about how Marvel feels about this stuff. They're poaching their actors. They're taking their characters. They're going after the golden child.
And they may as well, right? I mean, and, you know, at some point, you know, the end game here is got to be they want the Toms. They want Tom Holland and Tom Hardy together on that screen.
Everyone does.
And I do, too. Exactly. So I think that that's inevitable. It just remains to be seen how exactly that happens. I mean, I don't think you really need Peter Parker in the MCU. I mean, you could really just have them give him up to Sony. And of course, there's financial reasons they don't want to do that, too. But, you know, but he can still make an occasional Avengers appearance and, you know, say, can give his, you know, a couple one liners. But let Sony go fully nuts with that universe. I say, why not? You know, that's what I want to see.
I mean, it works for years. And honestly, I was always kind of upset. It's like, oh, we'll never see Spider-Man in the MCU. And then when they did make that deal happen, of course, it was really nice, but it ended up making me actually more nostalgic for the old Spider-Man films, because at least that was genuinely Spider-Man. Here, it hasn't felt like it's had that genuine Spider-Man mythos to it. So it's almost like, you know, like we had a good run, give the kid back. And one of the theories, and it's just absolutely a theory that has been on Reddit and a bunch of other blogs, CBR, comic book resources, and comicbookmovie.com. One theory is that this is going to be his last film in the MCU. And the reason why they are introducing so many of the former Spider-Man villains, why we might get to see Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire come in, is this idea that by breaking the multiverse with Spider-Man's wish to Doctor Strange to cast a spell to make everyone forget him, that Spider-Man is going to do something in which he gets completely removed from the MCU. So we will still have references to prior Spidey adventures, except you might not get to see him cross over with other heroes anymore. And that stuff could be referenced, but it's going to be a universe parallel to the MCU, and it's not going to be the MCU anymore. It's just going to be Spider-Man doing Spider-Man things, not having his films necessarily affect what goes on in the MCU, like with other heroes. So that's a theory, that this is Sony and Marvel's attempt at a clean divorce. That's why they brought back all the heavy hitters from all the previous Spider-Man films, because if this is going to be the last hurrah, you know, give him a Doctor Strange, give him all these other people, make as much money
as
possible.
Let's have one last wild night together.
Exactly. That's literally it.
Let's get all the booze, all the drugs we can get our hands on, and just go nuts. And then we'll call this a life.
Yeah, and honestly, if that's the case, I'm okay with that. And you know, one of our listeners, how do you pronounce his last name? Joe Freese.
I don't know how to pronounce his last name. This is the first Joe. Time I actually thought, had to think of it. So
Joe, you know, we love you. Joe mentioned at the end of this film, since obviously they're taking so much Spider-Verse inspiration, it's like at the end of this film, if they don't show Miles Morales in the in the end credits scene, there will be hell to pay. And I responded, Joe, I'm absolutely for you. And I think there's a better case for Miles to be the MCU Spider-Man at this point than even Peter Parker, because everything we've seen from MCU Peter is basically Miles Morales, from his friends to how everything kind of is. I mean, he's already basically Miles. So here's how you split it. Sony can keep Peter and they can do whatever animated Spider-Verse projects that they want to do, because they make all the money and win all the awards of that. And if you want to have a clean, fresh approach, and you know, it satisfies Spider-Man guys because it gives us a genuine Spider-Man experience, and it satisfies the woke crowd because Miles is the MC Spider-Man now. Honestly, I think it's a win-win. Send Peter off to Sony, give MCU Miles Morales a Spider-Man. I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you know, Peter ends up in some alternate reality, and that alternate reality might happen to be the one that is inhabited by, you know, Tom Hardy's Venom and Carnage and all that stuff.
And Morbius and Kraven the Hunter. Like, it's already there. It just doesn't have Spider-Man yet.
Maybe that works for everybody. And then, you know, they tease Miles Morales in Homecoming. So you'd think, at least by this third movie, two movies later, we're going to at least get a post-credits or something like that. I think at this point, how could they resist bringing Miles Morales into the MCU? And if it's just a swap with Tom Hardy, Tom Holland, and maybe Tom Hardy gets involved too, then everybody wins. So at the end, Remzo, did this trailer make you more excited than you previously were for this movie, or less excited?
More excited. I'll be completely honest. How can anyone watch that scene where Doc Ock comes in and he says that classic line, "Hello, Peter," and how can you not just smile?
I literally just smiled. Like, and to me, it didn't tell me anything I didn't already know, because, you know, we're nerds, we're on all the websites, and we knew this stuff was all going to be involved. We knew Alfred Molina had been signed, so, and Jamie Foxx and all this stuff. I don't think we saw Jamie Foxx in the trailer. I think we only saw Alfred Molina. Is that right?
You see Lightning.
Okay.
So here's the people that were basically teased. Basically the Sinister Six. Yeah. You got that
pumpkin bomb was there.
So you got Green Goblin, you've got Electro, you potentially have Sandman and Lizard, and then you have Doc Ock. And there's even strong speculation that you might even have Harry Osborn, played by James Franco.
Oh, really? Well, that would be interesting. That would be a twist that I had not expected.
Yeah, so that's that voice in the trailer that says...
But you may as well, right? Like you said, let's party. You know, let's bring everything in here.
Yeah, I mean, somebody mentioned, I think it was Andrew Meyer in the fan group, he mentioned that voice in the trailer where the screen goes dark and it says, "Be careful what you wish for, Parker." He brought it up, and I think a couple people jumped in. They're like, yeah, that's Franco. That sounds exactly like James Franco. Yeah, that sounds like him, because some people thought it was Doctor Strange, but people played it with a bunch of clips comparing how Benedict Cumberbatch talks.
The voice analysis nerds are on it.
They're on it. Same as the Mephisto nerds, because apparently Mephisto's in the movie because they saw someone draw devil horns on a picture of Peter, because obviously that means Mephisto now.
I'm never going to believe Mephisto's appearing in anything ever again until I see it happen.
I don't think he's coming back. I don't think he's coming in. He's never been here. But it's going to be a film that is just going to be absolute fan service. And ultimately, I think they saw, I think Marvel has to thank Sony more for anything, because really, if it hadn't been for Enter the Spider-Verse, well, I think we would have gone into the multiverse realm of things. I mean, that film, despite the fact that it's animated, despite the fact that it was not MCU ran, I mean, the fact that film did so well and it's so universally loved showed them that, you know, audiences can dig this. You know, I want to see Japanese Spider-Man with Leopolda, the giant robot. Oh, I want him to scream, "I am the emissary from hell, Spider-Man." I want to see that. That's how I'll be happy. That's you do that and I will never complain.
If we're going multiverse, you may as well go all the way. Nothing would surprise me at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am excited for it. I don't know if I'm more excited, because it just all it did was confirm all the stuff I've been reading about for months.
It feels good.
It feels good. It's like, okay, this is real. This is a multiverse fucking movie. So we're going to get all this crazy shit that I've been hearing about. And if this much is confirmed now, I really have no doubt we're going to get Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield in this thing. I don't think they're going to show it to us until the movie, because they want people to be surprised. But there's no doubt that this is what's happening at this point.
Oh, I think it's going to be in the second trailer.
Oh, okay. Maybe they will reveal it.
Yeah. The only other thing that we didn't mention in terms of like potential people who will make a spotlight, Matt Murdock. They're saying that we might get Charlie Cox's Daredevil in the film.
Yeah, I think that's almost confirmed or heavily rumored enough that I believe.
Well, people are going off of this idea that when Peter's in the interrogation room at the NYPD, that his lawyer is the guy with his sleeves rolled up wearing the vest. And they're like, that looks like Charlie Cox. And I'm like, all we have is a guy. Yeah, you're going by his forearm. That's literally it. It's like, tell me the
forearm anywhere.
Tell me those aren't Charlie Cox's hands. I'm like, I don't know. It's a generic white guy. Like, maybe. I mean, I would love to see that. But
for Remzo, all these white dudes' forearms look exactly the same.
All of them. Quote me on that. That is probably the biggest stretch. Because if they're going to do that, then that also insinuates that maybe they're not completely done with the Netflix era of Marvel. But at the same time, it's like, you know, Marvel is at this weird point where they're readjusting their continuity. We already saw that through the Loki TV show, they've basically written out Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They basically also said that through the whole Captain Carter What If era, they're basically also going to ignore everything that happened with Agent Carter, that TV series, despite the fact that we saw some of the actors from that, like the guy who played Jarvis in the show, like he appeared in Avengers Endgame. So I think Marvel is going through a phase where something really great's going to happen and something really controversial is going to happen. I think the really great thing is that now, like, all the intro films for all the newbies and shit like that, now they're just going to get weird. Now it's for the fans who have already been giving them billions of dollars. They're just going all in on that, and I freaking love it. And then the controversial thing is, like, if you liked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff, I'm sorry, but it doesn't matter anymore. It's been written out.
Well, that works out great for me, because I never saw one episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or one episode of Agent Carter, and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, so I mean, it's one of those things where it's like you're either gonna love it or you won't. But they need to readjust. They've got over 13 years of films and TV shows and everything in between. Like, it was gonna get to the point where it got so big they had to readjust and shed some fat. So, you know, I think this film, I don't know how many Spider-Man films are in Tom Holland's contract, but even if there's more than just this,
I recall reading that he was supposed to have two more after this, now that, like, as part of the new deal.
But was it signed with Sony, or was it still a joint contract? That's the question,
and that's what I don't know. Yeah, so that, I mean, his two more films after this could be a Venom crossover movie and a Kraven crossover movie, and you have no idea. So it can mean anything.
Yeah,
I'm excited about it either way. I was already excited about it. I think I agree with you. Just seeing Alfred Molina on the screen as Dr. Octopus is like, all right, I'm in. Take my money.
I'm going to go see it 5 times. I might not like it, but I'm still going to go see it 5 times.
No matter what, just on principle, right?
speaking of which, if you're good of moving on past this, the one movie that I thought I was going to watch like 5 times, I've only seen once now. I generally don't have an urge to go and watch it again. It's James Gunn's new Suicide Squad movie.
And that is funny, because I've actually seen that twice now.
Oh, how the tables have turned. It's not that I don't like it. I saw it and it's like, I'm good.
It was very, very fun. I saw it on my birthday, and I was under some sort of influence that will go undescribed, but let's just
makes
say
it funner.
If you like to watch movies under some kind of influence, I encourage you to watch this one that way. But it was all the fun that the first movie should have been, which just wasn't very fun at all. And I think it's just a perfect movie for fans that just want to watch a fun freaking comic book movie and not think too hard about it. Even if you're like a diehard and you were someone that, I don't know, really liked the first Suicide Squad movie for some reason, that was fine. You could continue from that. Take this as a sequel, has enough couple references and couple of the same characters that you can just take it as a continuation, or you could ignore that it ever existed, as some might be want to do, and just take it as its own kind of thing. And I think taken either way, it just worked really well. And at the end of the day, Margot Robbie is one of the most perfectly cast characters in the history of comic book casting. I mean, she is just so perfect as Harley Quinn.
Yeah, she is the Harley Quinn what Ryan Reynolds is the Deadpool.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, exactly. At this point, no one else could play that character convincingly. And it would just not seem right. And I can't say that has held true of, heck, hardly anyone. I mean, I looked at Michael Keaton that way for a long time. I know I'm old school, and not everyone sees him as the one true Batman, but I do. And even the other iterations. Like, I think Christian Bale did a great Clark Kent. Not as much a great
Batman.
You mean
Bruce Wayne?
Clark Kent. Bruce Wayne, yeah. He would be a decent
Well, multiverse is that.
I'm all in these weird multiverses now. And I, like you, am a supporter of Batfleck. I really do enjoy him as old, grizzled Batman. But to me, I mean, Michael Keaton is the best Batman of all time. That's no one's going to convince me otherwise. But like this character, I can at least accept other people playing Batman. I don't think I could ever even accept someone else playing Harley Quinn at this point because it's just so perfect.
There are a few actresses who sometimes I get confused and think they're Margot Robbie. And so I actually look and I'm like, they're not Margot Robbie.
Whoever these are, they are not her. I also recently watched Wolf of Wall Street. I've seen it before. Obviously, my wife hadn't seen it, though. So we watched Wolf of Wall Street. Poof.
There you go.
She does good work, Remzo. That's all I'm going
to
say.
She's committed to her craft.
The only other thing that could raise her, you know who she needs to play, Remzo, for all of us here? Emma Frost.
Oh, God.
Margot Robbie is Emma Frost. Bring it. Remzo will not be married anymore if that happens.
I'm going to have to go to marriage counseling for that one. You know,
all started with this comic book podcast. Where did things start to go wrong?
I liked the Suicide Squad. Like, I have really nothing negative to say about it. Like, it felt like it didn't try and be more than just an action film, yeah. Which I did appreciate. I mean, people have been comparing it to Guardians, but really, it's I don't think it's very comparable. I think in the humor aspect.
The humor and the fact that it's just a movie that has fun with itself, I think those are the only things it really has in common. And, you know, you can, I guess some of the vibe is there, but they're very different movies too.
Yeah. Like, I think the one thing I will say is that I had lower expectations for Idris Elba and I had higher expectations for John Cena just because they were hyping it up. And it's not to say I don't think Idris Elba is a great actor. I think he's probably like if he's not Hollywood's leading man, it's got to be like, you know, Henry Cavill in the back. But I would make an argument that Idris Elba is what's bringing people to see movies that they wouldn't otherwise watch right now. I think he's Hollywood's leading man right now.
The whole reason I saw Cat.
I mean, you know, hashtag release the butthole cut. But, you know, I really was impressed because, like, this wasn't his typical, you know, grizzled action kick-ass character. Like, this was somebody who could be self-deprecating and a little bit funny, but he also brings that, oh, man, he can kick your ass factor. And I didn't know that they were going to lean on him as much as the person to carry this movie, and he really did. So I think, you know, I was really impressed with how they had his character of Bloodsport. With that said, I had really high expectations of John Cena's Peacemaker because he had been hyped up so much for this film. And honestly, like, I can't name a scene in the movie where he was in it where it's like I genuinely, like, if I had to think of a scene that was his funniest, I can't really think of any. He said some funny stuff. There were some funny scenes, but really, like, what you see in the trailers is really that.
I am a John Cena mark, you might say. Obviously, I'm a huge professional wrestling fan.
But could you see him?
That's how I know. I can see him. I did see him this past weekend at SummerSlam. That's how I'm connected to our good friends on the North-South Connection feed. Justin over there, who's one of the co-founders of that feed, where you can find this podcast every single Sunday, like clockwork. We actually met at my very first job in 2000, my very first post-college job, I should say. I had other jobs before that, but my first like TV job post-college, I met Justin, and we formed our friendship over our mutual love for professional wrestling. So we've been friends since then, and that's how I got, you know, that's how they 12, 13 years later, he would start a wrestling podcast, and I, just as I was getting back into wrestling and comics, so the synergy was just right there, and here we are now. So be sure to, if you're not listening to us on the North-South feed, continue to listen to us on the Second Print Comics Connection feed? podcast. Feed, but do check out the North-South feed, where you get a ton of pro wrestling related content, and lots of pop culture content. Our friend Jenny does her shows over there. There's so much fun stuff on the North-South South Connection feed, so
we love you, Jenny.
But yeah, I mean, to me, like, I actually kind of agree with you. Like, I was looking forward a lot to the John Cena aspect of this movie, and I wouldn't say he was bad. He was fine. He played the role of Peacemaker that as he was supposed to play it, I'm sure, just fine. But yeah, something kind of fell flat with it for me as well. Like, it didn't blow me away. I wasn't on the floor holding my side to the John Cena moments kind of as much as I expected to. And he played the role well. Like, he plays this kind of like straightforward character who's kind of there for our comic relief. relief, but he's not comedic himself. And I think he just played the role perfectly fine. But like you said, I think what you said is true. Like, we saw the funny moments. We saw them in the trailer. And, you know, everything else is kind of straightforward. Now, we're going to see more from this character because I'm sure you're aware of this. And they did tease us in the post-credit scene. But this character is returning. He's returning to his own HBO Max. I'm not sure if it's a series or a movie, but it's an HBO Max project that's coming from.
It's going to be we don't know if it's a limited series or if it's ongoing. I don't think that part necessarily matters, but it's going to be. It has actually wrapped up filming, so it's in post-production. It was once again written and directed by James Gunn, and it's called Fuck, It's Peacemaker. And if you saw
it's
the...
It's called Fuck, It's Peacemaker?
It's called Fuck, It's Peacemaker.
Really?
It's HBO Max.
Great.
Yeah, so Fuck, It's Peacemaker. And if you saw the end of the film, the end credit scene, then obviously it wasn't that big of a surprise, but like... As that happened, even though they had announced it beforehand, and, you know, like, I'll go ahead and spoil it. They, quote, kill him at the end of the movie, and then the end credits, you find out, oh, no, he's alive, and it sets up
the
TV show.
That's not really a spoiler.
Yeah, I mean, if that spoiled it for you, like, I'm not even sorry. Like, there was so much stuff out there about this, it shouldn't have been a surprise. But, like, when I saw that, I almost was like, do I really want a Peacemaker TV show? Like, do I? And like 10 years ago, I would have never said that. I'm like, give me all the superhero comic book content you can. I almost feel like we're at a point where it's like, I think I'm good. I don't think I want this. Like, I'll watch it, but, you know, I wasn't wowed.
I will certainly watch it. But yeah, that wasn't the highlight of the movie for me as much as I expected it to be.
I think what's the funniest thing about it, though, is that when I watched it, one thing for me was definitely confirmed. It's that they absolutely just swapped out Deadshot for Bloodsport. And
yeah, they acted like they didn't, but they did.
It was literally like, there is definitely, and I think somebody from Warner Brothers actually leaked this, that several times during filming, James Gunn accidentally called Bloodsport Deadshot.
Some things didn't even make sense too. They even like Bloodsport even like said like, oh yeah, like, I go way back with Rick Flagg. We're old friends or something. But like, you shouldn't be friends if you just came onto the team just now and were a villain before.
Well, they said they were former special forces together or something like that. But it felt like one of those things that's like canned in there to force the character progression. So you could see like some patchwork in there. And like, come on, you're telling me that you have a guy who's basically Deadshot, who's only route to being a partially good guy is his daughter. And that he also has this code of ethics where it's like, he's also not really a villain, but he does bad stuff like shoot Superman with a kryptonite bullet. So, you know, he's bad. That was totally Deadshot because they wanted Will Smith to return. And Will Smith was like, nah, the last movie fucking sucks. I'm not coming back. All Warner Brothers did was switch out one black guy for another black guy and just make some name changes to the script. Otherwise, as much as I liked Idris Elba and Bloodsport, it was Deadshot. Like it was, and it was just kind of odd in a way because in the back of my head, that's, you know, I just kept thinking that. So, you know, I think Polka Dot Man was my favorite breakout. Yeah, I think he was the breakout of the film. How do you feel about the very beginning of the film where it's like all the characters that they had been teasing basically get killed off within the first 5 minutes, and they even managed to kill off Captain Boomerang, who was such a main part of the first Suicide Squad film.
I loved all of that. I love that they made us think, here's your new Suicide Squad team, even showed us the whole introduction and everything. And then, yeah, they're all dead, except for basically Harley Quinn and Rick Flagg from there. And then we see the backup team. They were just okay, we've already spoiled a few things.
I thought that was smart. Yeah, like, I thought that was smart.
But yeah, I really thought it was smart. Also, King Shark. King Shark was an absolute blast of a character. And I don't know. This is King Shark, the character. there are some in the Eric Larson community. There is an Eric Larson Savage Dragon. There's some in the Savage Dragon community that believe that King Shark is based on a Savage Dragon character, Mako, who has been in the book since the early 90s. King Shark was a character, I believe, that came out later than that. So that is quite possible. And if you want to go even earlier, Eric Larson created Mako when he was a kid writing graphic fantasy. So I don't know if he's based on Mako, but to me, this character was how I envisioned Mako looking in a book, in a movie, and this, that's how King Shark was. So I had an extra sort of meta level of fan enjoyment seeing, in my mind, Mako brought to life as King Shark. Now, the King Shark character is a very different character than Mako. Mako, like, you know, speaks like a regular human and is just really mean and everything, whereas King Shark is kind of like the Drax of this movie, I guess you could say, in a way. He's kind of like seen as like the dumb savage who gets a lot of these like funny one-liners and funny moments.
He was supposed to technically be, and I think James Gunn did this on purpose, he's actually, I would compare him to more of like a Groot, because in the comics King Shark only says one thing. King Shark says King Shark is a shark. What do you think about that, King Shark? King Shark is a shark. Like, that's what he says. So if they had done that again, where it's another celebrity, like, I still meet people who don't realize this. That was Sylvester Stallone as King Shark.
Yeah.
That's the most acting he's done in a while. And he got paid a ridiculous amount of money to do that. So, you know,
works there, too.
Yeah, nobody wanted it to be like Vin Diesel, where he records I Am Groot for an hour across multiple movies, gets paid billions to tweet stuff, and then, you know, it's just another person in CGI doing it. Whereas with King Shark, I think James Gunn kind of realized that, so that's why he didn't have him give his classic King Shark is a shark line all the time. He actually gave him some custom lines, which were funny. You know, I'll give him that.
I was like, the King Shark character had far more comedic moments to me than John Cena, as did Polka Dot Man.
Yeah.
As did arguably even Starro. What did you think of Starro?
I think that was literally the best choice they could have done for this film, because let's be honest, the first Suicide Squad with Enchantress and everything else, like, it took itself so seriously, it was impossible to look at that and think, God, this was their best choice for a villain. Like, with this one, you know, we're dealing with another potential, like, oh, this villain could bring about the end of the world scenario. But at the same time, it's like, we could be ridiculous with this. So by choosing Starro, one, you not only actually brought, like, a very serious, like, you know, possible world-ending villain to the stage, but he also just looks so stupid on screen, it's perfect. So I actually think how they introduced him in and how they had Starro fit into the whole scheme of the film, I think it's probably one of, dare I say, one of the better DCEU villain choices for a film.
Yeah, I mean, it's one villain that, I mean, it's not a kind of character that I had ever even imagine seeing on a screen before, and that's just what I really enjoyed about it so much, was that seeing this character come to life in a way that was just visually awesome, was I think written in a really interesting way, and to the point that by the end of the movie, I actually felt more sympathy, I think, for Starro than maybe any of the members of the Suicide Squad that were there trying to defeat Starro, once they realized, you know, they already know that they're the Suicide Squad and everything, but they decided to actually be heroes because they were told to just let Starro just go crazy and basically just destroy the whole island, where they were like, and that's when they kind of made the decision, like, no, we're actually going to do a heroic thing here and stop this thing. But I mean, that one line from Starro right before the, you know, totally, you know, went away and had, you know, taken over these, you know, many of the citizens of this island, the one character just says, like, I was so happy just staring at the stars, and I was like, ah, Starro, buddy. Come on. I mean, it's not his fault he was captured and held in this thing for God knows how long, experimented on by what was the character, was it the thinker?
Yeah, Starro in 15 minutes had more character depth than any of the DC film villains that we've seen so far.
More than Tom Holland Spider-Man.
More than Tom Holland Spider-Man.
You could definitely make that argument. But Starro is a better developed character than Tom Holland Spider-Man.
But, than Zod, better than Lex Luthor, billion times better than Steppenwolf. I don't even remember the villains from, like, you know, Aquaman, Shazam, Wonder Woman. I don't even remember those villains at this point. Starro is number one in the DCEU. He's right on top.
There's a strong case for that.
Yeah, especially since I would say it was Zack Snyder's Steppenwolf, but according to Warner Brothers, we need to stop talking about it now. So if you're sticking me with the Whedon
version,
we're not
allowed to talk about Zack Snyder's Steppenwolf or the Snyder Cut.
Well, they don't want us to talk about either because they're just like it's
it.
One and done.
They're like we did it, we put it out, just shut up.
Yeah, so if I'm stuck with a testicle head Steppenwolf from the Whedon version, then yeah, so Starro is the number one villain in the DCEU.
What do you think? Or do you want to do a quick rating for this movie? What would you give this movie?
You know, story wise, like I really liked it. Action was great. It was all there. I'll give it a 7.5.
Okay. I had 8 out of 10 in my head, so not too far off. I just think it was, you know, this is not a.
You know what would have done it for me if they had shown more Weasel.
Oh, yeah, I love Weasel.
My favorite line in that entire film is, "The Weasel is dead. I repeat, the Weasel is dead." And Amanda Waller is like, "Did anyone see if the Weasel could swim?" And no one says anything.
They all look at each other awkwardly like. And what's his name's character in the beginning? I can't remember his name. The one that tried to save Weasel.
Savant. Michael Rooker's character.
Yeah. He was great.
I think starting off with Michael Rooker and, you know, killing him when they did, that was, at first I was upset. I'm a big Michael Rooker fan, but like it was, they made it work. They made it work. Well,
the whole movie worked for me. I mean, I think Gary did say, I'll give it an 8 out of 10. You know, this is not, you know, Dancing with Wolves or anything, but it's a really enjoyable movie. So much so that I watched it twice and Remzo watched it once. Confounding. Absolutely confounding.
Yeah, I would equate it. So did you ever see Smoking Aces?
No, I have not seen that film.
It's like this underrated film. It's got Ben Affleck, Chris Pine, Stanley Tucci. Like it's got a ton of like real highbrow actors in this film. And for some weird reason, like 2007, when it came out, it was just like nobody talked about it, but it's actually a really good action flick. And if you watch Smokin' Aces, you're going to watch that and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, that's the Birds of Prey movie. Oh my gosh, that's the Suicide Squad. I've noticed that they've all kind of followed the same kind of generic format and flow and stuff like that. And it all reminds me of Smoking Aces. So if you've never seen Smoking Aces, go watch that movie. And it's literally, I feel like this and Birds of Prey were kind of copycats in a way, but what do I know?
All right. Well, at the end of the day, pretty good film. I recommend watching it. I recommend Remzo actually watches it a second time like he did for Wonder Woman.
You think it's going to get a sequel? You think we're going to get the Suicide Squad?
Just keep adding thes on the front. I don't know, because supposedly it didn't do that great. People are saying anyway, but it's hard to judge movies by the old metrics now because it did have an HBO Max release and you don't pay extra for that like you do on Disney. So maybe it's hard to judge box office in the same way, because even with the Disney movies, they do, you know, they have that $30 fee, so they can still judge, you know, how much money is being taken in that way. But I don't know. I'd like to see another one. I'd like him to keep doing these because to me they're fun, you know. So I'll keep watching them if James Gunn keeps making them. But I don't need to see any Ayers cuts or anything like that.
I would rather see more Suicide Squad than any of the other DC films at this point.
Yeah, me too, for sure.
Oh, speaking of DC films, real fast, only because you brought it up earlier, Michael Keaton returning in the Flash film. He's basically confirmed that he doesn't just have like a couple scenes. Like Michael Keaton is a big part of the Flash film. And apparently he will have more appearances in this film than even Ben Affleck. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, I'm actually a fan of both those actors as Batman. So I'm excited to see as much Michael Keaton as they want to give me in that Flash movie. And, you know, just like Marvel's going into the multiverse, DC is going into the multiverse here as well. And maybe this opens things up to have a world where the Snyderverse exists. The extended universe movies maybe exist in their own films. This other Batman movie with Robert Pattinson exists, and maybe they all exist and in sort of the same shared multiverse, so to speak. And heck, at this point, may as well go balls out with this stuff. And but I'm super excited to see Michael Keaton back in this role. I'm very curious what sort of Batman he's going to play. And from what I understand, he is supposed to basically play like that exact same. He's not just like playing some Batman. He's playing that.
He is Tim Burton's Batman.
Right. He is the Batman that we saw in Batman and Batman Returns. So I'm excited about that. And I'm excited to see how they use that character. Do they use him more like a Thomas Wayne Batman? Not as obviously Thomas Wayne Batman. He's gonna be playing Bruce Wayne, but he's gonna be like an older Batman. So is he gonna play more of that type of role? Since this is like a Flashpoint movie, is he gonna be the Batman when the Flash goes and tries to save his dad and messes up the whole thing? Or are we gonna see the Batmans together? Or is it gonna be like, you know, Batfleck is in this universe, then Flash messes things up and now is in this universe with the Michael Keaton Batman or what? And I'm kind of more curious than anything else what kind of interaction we're going to see between Michael Keaton Batman and Batfleck. I hope some, but it's possible it's none. They might just be separate Batman that the Flash interacts with along his journey here. So either way, I'm really excited about it, because to me, the more Michael Keaton, the better in general. I just think he's a fantastic actor, but specifically as Batman, and the fact that he's playing this Batman, this actual Batman that I grew up absolutely loving and that I think truly does hold up as well, I'm super excited about it.
You think it's kind of weird that we've been talking about this movie for almost 2 years now, and the least exciting thing about it is the Flash?
Yeah, by far, yeah.
All the Flash updates about this film are about Keaton and Affleck.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know. For all I know, the guy playing the Flash is the one from the WB TV series. I mean, that's how little I've even thought about Ezra Miller, the fact that he's playing the Flash, or what's happening with the Flash character, or where that's even going. By far, to me, the most exciting part of this is the Batman aspect. Both seeing Batfleck and Tim Burton in this, and Tim Burton. I don't know if Tim Burton's going to be in it. That would be amazing too. But seeing both of those Batman and how they interact, how they tie into the story, how they tie into this greater multiverse, like, that's what I'm excited about. The fact they're using Flash as the tool to get us there, that's fine. And that seems to me the most sort of logical tool to use, considering how that character's been used in DC.
It's his first movie, though. And it's almost like, I feel like I would have been happier if they named the film Justice League Flashpoint. Because we're not just getting them, we're also getting the introduction of the DCEU Supergirl. We're getting some other characters here and there. So it's like, it feels weird that for the Flash's first solo film outing, the least important thing about the film is him.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, other than Zack Snyder's version of Justice League, almost all of these DC movies have disappointed me in some way, although some have grown on me as I've gone along. Honestly, the funny thing, the movie that disappointed me the least, I would actually say, is Aquaman. And I'm not saying that because I think it's a great movie.
Oh, I would say Shazam, because Shazam, I would say as a standalone film, Shazam is probably neck and neck with Man of Steel.
I liked it. I think I need to give it a second watch. I feel like I watched it maybe a bit distracted or something, because I liked it, but I don't think I love it as much as others love it. But I can't really say why. So I think it's one of those that needs a second look.
You know what I think it is? I watch it as a Christmas movie. No, I'm not shitting you. I watch it every Christmas now.
Every Christmas? It's been out for what, like 2 years?
About 3 years, yeah. So Shazam is a backdoor Christmas movie.
We should do a podcast called Backdoor Christmas Movie. Episode one, Shazam.
We'll get balls deep into that. But yeah, I mean, it just feels weird. It's like, I think, and this is going back to our thing about Spider-Man, I think the studios have lost the ability to do a solo superhero movie that's just about being a good film. I think that's why, honestly, the one film that I'm really, really excited about is The Batman. With the guy
Pattinson.
Who, yeah,
I mean, Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, I mean, who's the director for that? Reeves, yeah, Matt Reeves. Yeah, like Matt Reeves, who did Seven. No, he didn't do Seven. Did he do Seven?
Why don't you talk about why you're excited about the movie while I do internet research?
Yeah, so I mean, they've said it outside of continuity. They've said that it's not going to be, you know, giant universe bait. It's you know, they're going back to really the idea of a good solo superhero movie.
Matt Reeves directed the biggest ones he's done are the last two. He did War of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
That's it. Those are good films.
He also did Let Me In. Now, if you've ever seen that, that's a really good horror film. Time to bring this story up. This is a story. He also directed a movie starring David Schwimmer called The Pallbearer. Which I actually have a story about this, and I think it's appropriate.
I've never heard about that movie.
This came up. I've never seen the movie. I just know it's a movie with David Schwimmer, and I assume it's bad. So when I was just out of college, maybe a year or two out of college, sometime in the early 2000s here, I was drinking quite heavily at a bar with some friends of mine in Los Angeles, and where obviously a lot of famous actors live, and you often see them out in the wild. So my friends and I were sitting, and we saw David Schwimmer just sitting with a woman on a date, and of course decided to mess with him because we're young assholes. And so my friend bet me $20, which honestly, at this time in my life, that was a big deal. Like $20 was huge. That was amazing. Like, I think I had $40 like left over at the end of the month after I paid my bills when I first moved to LA. So like, I just like doubled my disposable, or like I just raised my disposable income by like 50%. So I'm in for whatever is getting me that $20. And my friend said, all right, go up to David Schwimmer and just, you need to ask him, when is the Paul Bearer 2 coming out? And so I go up to David Schwimmer, and he's on a date, and I just go like, hey man, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I just want to let you know, I'm like, I'm a huge fan. I really love your work. I really love your the movies, Friends. I just absolutely love it. He's like, oh, thanks a lot, man. And then I go, I just have to know. My friends and I were all wondering, when is Paul Bearer 2 coming out? And he immediately, his face changed. Like, yeah, he totally bought me in the beginning. His face went from smiling to like not smiling. Smiling at all, and he just goes, yeah, real funny man. And I was like, I'm sorry man, I made $20 doing that, I'm sorry, and I just walked away. And I got my $20. Probably bought like four more beers with that in 2004. That's my story about David Schwimmer and the Paul Bearer. And if David Schwimmer is listening to this podcast, I apologize. I was a little asshole. There's no reason for that. I hope I didn't ruin your night. I hope things went well with that young lady. She looked very lovely. So bet you didn't expect a story about David Schwimmer on this episode.
But we're all better for it. And I hope that Matt Reeves' Batman releases a trailer soon.
This makes me want to go watch The Paul Bearer to judge Matt Reeves' early directing.
I'm gonna have to go see a trailer for that after this.
We'll do a live watch of The Paul Bearer.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so I mean, I wish we could just have good solo superhero movies again.
I'm looking forward to Shang-Chi. Shang-Chi, I think you're supposed to pronounce it. And that seems to potentially be one of those. So, although I'm already a little bit like, all right, they're going too superhero with this. Because Shang-Chi in the comics has no powers. He's just freaking really good at martial arts. Like, that's his whole thing. And already in the movie, it appears like it's all about him getting the Ten Rings and getting powers. And who knows? Maybe they'll surprise me and he will end up just being really good at martial arts. But I mean, yeah, I've read some Shang-Chi books. I stumbled upon one when I was when I hit the random comic button on the Marvel Unlimited app to do an episode of the Random Marvel Comics podcast, which you can hear exclusively on the Second Print Patreon, patreon.com/secondprintpod. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that. It caused me to go and read some other Shang-Chi stories. And it's just like, they're just really interesting because they take place in this Marvel universe, and you know, he battles, you know, villainy type villains, but he does it all with wits and martial arts and with friends of, you know, help from his friends in the British special service. And it's just like fun. It's just really fun stuff.
It's literally Bruce Lee from Enter the Dragon.
He is just Bruce Lee. So yeah, it seems like he's going to be something different in this movie. And I'm very open to it and excited about it. But it does seem like it's going to be, you know, slightly different than the comics where he's just really freaking good at martial arts. But we'll see.
Well, yeah, my only criticism isn't even of what they're saying the film is going to be. It's the fact that in the recent trailer, they intro the trailer by showing clips from other Marvel movies to solidify that once again, this is an MCU film, as if we didn't already know already. But it's one of the situations where it's like, you know, they just
want people to know, because most people at home aren't going to recognize Shang-Chi. They're like, this is in that thing. This is that thing you love. We make millions off this. Go pay for this thing.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's going to be good. I've been looking forward to it for a while. I like the one change they made by making his father the Mandarin, and by making the Mandarin not necessarily the Mandarin from the comics, but really someone that's more authentic to the idea of the character, but also fits into what's been established in the MCU. So basically, his name is Wen Wu. He's a completely new version of the Mandarin created for the MCU. They will be referencing the whole Trevor Slattery Mandarin switcheroo from Iron Man 3, but they're really saying that they really focused on him being a transformational villain instead of just a one-off Marvel villain. So I don't know what they mean by that. I think what that basically means is that he's actually going to be memorable for once.
I think it means like, no, this one's going to be good.
I don't even know who the bad guy for the upcoming Marvel films is. Like, we don't know who it's going to be for. We don't even know who it's going to be for Multiverse of Madness. A Multiverse for Madness.
The multiverse is the villain.
Isn't that coming out before or after No Way Home?
It's coming out after. Right now, I believe Multiverse of Madness is scheduled for March of 2022.
Fuck. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Well, anyway, like if they want to give us an actual Mandarin who's actually more like the one from the comics, I'm cool with it because I've been pissed off at Iron Man 3 ever since they did that bullshit. And if it's going to be in a Shang-Chi film, like let it be, man. I'm all for it. I've loved the trailer so far. I grew up on a TNT Kung Fu Sundays and everything else. Like, you know, Enter the Dragon and Legend of the Fist are some of my favorite martial arts films. So they're going to, you know, try and do something in that vein. Let it be.
Yeah, well, I know who's not going to be in this movie because in the comics.
Mephisto.
Mephisto might be. In the comics, Shang-Chi's father is Fu Manchu.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring him up.
Also a villain and is the most absolutely. And I'm not one to get worked up about these things. I'm not worked up about this, but it's true. Is like a completely the most blatantly stereotypically racist Asian character you can possibly dream up in your mind. That is Fu Manchu. I mean, that is what Fu Manchu is. He's the absolute like image of a racist stereotypical Asian person that would never be published or never exist in 2021. But that's why you're not going to see this character.
I would even say back then it was still bad.
That's what I'm saying. It was always probably bad. It was probably really bad even then when it was okay to do bad stuff. But
yeah, like that. I'm glad they did that. I didn't want to bring it up because I didn't want to get into that. But I think you did it great. It's like, yeah, sometimes changes are good.
Yeah, like I think you and I are as far from like a woke SJW like person you could possibly be. But even I am willing to say like, no, that was pretty fucking racist when something is, you know. And yeah, that one is. So I think that's an okay change. That's a change I'm okay with.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with that. So, you know, it's also funny too because the actor who's playing Shang-Chi, it's so funny because like years ago, like a decade ago, he had tweeted at Marvel. He was already big in like the Chinese film industry. He was like, "Hey, good job, Marvel, with all these other films. How about introducing an Asian character #Shang-Chi?" And then
into his DMs.
That was fan casting if there ever was one, because people had been lobbying for him forever, almost as much as like, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange.
That's one of the most amazing things about fanhood now, is that like now we like fans, if there's enough of a movement, you really can cast movies. I mean, fans made Ryan Reynolds Deadpool.
Yeah, but look what they did Sonic the Hedgehog. They postponed the whole film and they had to go back and re-edit how Sonic looked because fans were so mad.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why some people went to go see that movie, because they had bullied the creators so much that they felt they had an obligation to go pay to see the movie.
We got an awesome, 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 unexpectedly awesome Joker from Jared Leto that we didn't get in the Suicide Squad just because everyone wanted us to, wanted to bring back the Snyder Cut. And that to me, that's one of the best parts, the best things that came out of that movie was a glimmer that, ooh, okay, he does do a good Joker. We just didn't get to see it before.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where sometimes, you know, some people call it like toxic fandom. Sometimes toxic fandom is good. Like if it leads to stuff like this.
Speaking of Joker stories, I wasn't going to talk about this too much because you brought it up. I know before the show, when we were talking about what we're going to talk about today, I know you wanted to talk about Titans season 3. Now, I had never seen a Titans episode, but last night I figured, why not? Remzo wants to talk about this a little bit. So funny story about me and Titans season 3. I just turned it on. I decided, you know, I was a little intimidated at first. I was like, do I need to watch the first two seasons? And I was like, screw it. I'm just going to turn on this first episode of season 3 and see what happens. And they start freaking hot. I don't even know if there's any backstory in the season or they were introducing the character, but we meet Jason Todd, and within minutes we see him being murdered by the Joker, fucking killing joke style. And I was just, it pulled me right in. I was totally in. Funny thing is, and this is not, I was actually getting into the episode. Like I think I do want to go back and keep watching it. But I did this like late at night, and I Remzo, I'm an old man now. I can't really stay up too late past 10 or 11 without a lot of effort. So I fell asleep mid-episode. And I woke up probably three episodes later to the Red Hood being violent as shit. And I was like, oh shit, this is where I wanted to get to. But like, I miss everything that got me there. So I'll say, from the little bit of this show I've seen, I really liked it. And now I do actually want to go back. And I'm not sure if you can tell me if the first two seasons are worth watching. But from what I've seen of the third season, I'm interested. So I you know, my old man sleepiness kept me from telling you more about the series. But from the little tidbits I've seen, I do like it. So fire away. What are you excited about?
I've got a love-hate relationship with Titans. I've got to do a Remso rant about this one day, get in more detail. But I can tell you that you're absolutely fine not going back and watching seasons one and two. Really, they've done it in a way, I don't know whether it was intentional or not, but they did a lot more aggressive marketing for this, I think, since it became HBO Max exclusive.
I drive by billboards here in Los Angeles like every day with
Titan. Yeah, the season marks the transition from the DC Universe exclusive shows to all those shows being now on HBO Max. That's one of the reasons why like Doom Patrol had a big sudden surge like three seasons afterwards for a lot of people. They thought it had just come out because it was one of the shows that was being marketed as now an HBO Max exclusive show. So for Titans season three, it's really, they've done it in a way where it's like, you really don't have to know much of what happened prior to just know who these characters are. And really, you know who these characters are. Like, there's really no surprise with it. You know, the first two seasons, I would say that season one is kind of trash and season two is just, you know, it's like five episodes too unnecessary. But with this season, like it's one of those situations where I almost feel like with Warner Brothers, it's got this syndrome of just we'll give you what you want. Why don't you love us? Because they just go straight into it. Like with the Red Hood story and everything else, and this always goes into the criticism of adapting something from the page to the screen. Like, will they do it justice? And they're just at the point where it's like, listen, you guys wanted Red Hood? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to beat the shit out of Jason. We're going to have Batman kill Joker and run away. We're going to have the Titans come to Gotham. And then we're just going to have Jason as Red Hood just murder a bunch of people. And that's literally it. And they even got the guy who played Pete Campbell to join the series as Scarecrow, which I kind of like his Scarecrow, but yeah, I mean, it's just really, really fucking shocking. And because we're only in week two of season three and everything, you know, I won't spoil it too much, but they kill one of the Titans in episode three of the season. And I didn't fucking see it coming. And it's been bugging me ever since. So I think
so semi-spoiler alert. Someone dies, but we don't know who.
Yeah, like the series isn't great. Like, I have plenty of problems with it, but I am to Titans what you are to Jonathan Hickman. I have so many problems with it, but I can't stop watching
it. You just can't quit him.
I can't quit it.
Yeah. No, that's an accurate description of my relationship with Jonathan Hickman. It's like, I think I'm done, and then I look over and I see a flow chart and a blueprint, and I am in. I got to know who's living where, who's sleeping with who, who's sleeping next to who.
Yeah. So if you have HBO Max, you've been wondering whether now is the right time to get into Titans, and you've never watched the previous seasons, don't worry about that shit. Just go straight into season three and you'll know literally everything you need to know in the season premiere and onward.
All right. So I'm going to sit down with like a cup of coffee sometime over the weekend and try to watch those episodes. Cause they really got me in with the, you know, the whole Jason Todd thing and everything. And the I wasn't even expecting a version of Batman in this show at all, or at least Bruce Wayne we saw.
Yep. Yep. Well, shit gets wild.
I don't think we have too much time. We're kind of wrapping things up.
We covered a ton of shit.
To die. We covered a lot here. I think we talked about covering some of the books we're reading right now, but I don't want to, if we're going to talk about that stuff, I'd rather do it justice. So maybe we'll table that stuff. Maybe we'll even do a short little bonus show for our patrons to talk about some of the books we've been reading lately. But I think that's going to wrap it for today, because we've covered just about everything we could cover. The only thing we really didn't talk about here too much, or at all actually, is What If, which you have been reviewing each and every week with our friend Caleb France over on our Patreon. So we don't need to go into today too much, but just overall thoughts, how have you been enjoying the show? I think we've had two episodes come out upon this recording.
Love it. You know, people have made some criticisms. They think it's probably You know, one of definitely those experimental type of moves that Marvel was going to make as they continued this like middle phase into the next phase of Marvel films. I love it. I think the animation is pretty cool. I love the fact that they brought back a lot of the original voice actors. Like, they had Josh Brolin in the last episode. We had Michael Rooker, and obviously it was Chadwick Boseman's final performance as the role of T'Challa that brought a tear to my eye. I love the series. You know, like I said earlier, we're past the normie phase of stuff, and now we're just getting into the psycho crazy weird shit that's so much fun.
We're getting weird, which I like a lot.
Yeah,
this is like, now it's just like, it's all fan service now, especially with that Disney Plus stuff. And the fan service doesn't mean you need to be a total nerd. You could be a new fan, but it's fan service in the sense like, we're just gonna do weird shit and we're gonna have fun with this stuff.
It's like, for the people that were reading this when like Blade hadn't even hit theaters and stuff like that, like, this is for you. Like, this is for all of you people.
Well, that's me. I was reading the stuff long before Blade hit theaters.
So. Yeah. So like, this is epic. It really is. And I love this series. You can listen to it every week over at patreon.com/secondprintpod.
All right. Well, I think that about does it. Next week, we will be returning to the quote unquote standard Second Print format here. But again, we're going to be doing this at least for the time being, until maybe fan feedback makes us change things again at some point. But for now, every fourth Wednesday, you're going to hear us talking about either books we're reading, which you really didn't get to today, or just whatever we're watching, TV shows, movies, trailers, news, whatever we want. It's potpourri. Maybe that's what we'll call it. Second Print potpourri. We'll see.
There you go. Well, as always, folks, make sure to follow us on social media across Al Gore's amazing internet, Second Print Pod, everywhere across social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You know how to find us. You know how the internet works. I'm Remsa W. Martinez.
And I am the marvelous Mark Klein.
As always, read comics, change the world.
Change the world.
Good night, America.
Adios.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.